25th anniversary of the Women, Peace and Security Agenda, Canada's leadership on CEDAW's General Recommendation 30 and 1325, and the 9 other resolutions that form the corpus of the Women, Peace and Security Agenda is now more urgent than ever. You have acknowledged the changing nature of the Women, Peace and Security Agenda in response to conflict threats, new technologies, and even outer space. And one of these shifts that you have noted is one that I would like to raise. You have commented on Resolution 78241 on lethal autonomous weapon systems adopted by the UN General Assembly last year, and you have said that in order to be compliant with international humanitarian law, emerging technologies in this area must maintain an appropriate level of human involvement. And during a dialogue on your feminist foreign policy, you have said that you are concerned that the laws, that is, the lethal autonomous weapon systems, consistent with the principles related to the Women, Peace and Security Agenda. I look forward to your comments on this as an important Women, Peace and Security issue. Now to get back to education and Article 10, thank you for joining Australia, Germany and Netherlands to hold the Taliban accountable under international law and the CEDAW for the gross violations of Afghan women rights, especially the denial of girls' and women's rights to education. This action marks the first time that Article 29 of CEDAW's, the interstate jurisdictional clause of the treaty providing for dispute resolution, is being invoked by a member state. Coming to the domestic sphere, despite Canada's reputation as a world leader in technology, the World Intellectual Property, WIPO's, gender gap report on worldwide patented inventions found that Canada lags behind the world average. Only 1 out of 8 Canadian AI inventors is a woman, in comparison to the world's average of 1 out of 4. In 2022, the Canadian federal government tabled the Artificial Intelligence and Data Act to address the design, development, and deployment of AI systems in Canada and in the world. And in line with CEDAW's GR40 on women's parity in leadership, what concrete measures will you take to claim gender parity in design, development, and deployment of these new technologies? What measures would you take to ensure that women scholars across disciplinary divides from engineering to law to the arts inform the AI revolution? And how can Indigenous women's contributions to science, research and innovation become part of the academic pedagogy? And how can Indigenous epistemology or way of thinking and knowledge be introduced into data governance and data sovereignty? Indigenous data sovereignty is a call to control the collection, use, and management of information in an era of big data. And right now, before the World Intellectual Property Organization, an intergovernmental committee is considering a treaty that looks at traditional cultural expressions and genetic resources as part of an Indigenous traditional knowledge. How can Canada inform the evolution of both international law and domestic law? I go on to Moore versus British Columbia, a landmark decision on disability rights. The decision confirmed that special education is not a dispensable luxury for those with severe learning disabilities. School districts are struggling to provide special education facilities simply by reason of financial difficulties. How would you provide this under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, because that prohibits discrimination on the grounds of mental or physical disability? The gap in education levels between Indigenous people and non-Indigenous people seems to be widening. It's at a crisis level. What is the percentage of Indigenous women in universities and in faculty of your academic institutions? How are Indigenous women supported in their scholarly research? What is the number of Indigenous women in STEM? And Canada's Indian residential school system will forever cast a shadow on Canada's legacy on global women's leadership. 2 years ago, Pope Francis, during a week-long trip to Canada, conducted a penitential pilgrimage of healing, reconciliation, and hope between the church and Indigenous people. How can educational institutions become primary centers of teaching truth, healing, and reconciliation? Of the 94 calls to action released by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, calls to action numbers 62 and 63 call for the revision of textbooks and strengthening learning connected with Indigenous perspectives, cultures, histories, and contemporary realities. How would you advance those revisions, and how would you support the commemoration of former Indian residential school students and their families in accordance with the commemoration policy directive? These are core to an educational policy.